Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the A-Side Live Chat here on MMAfighting.com. It's, of course, as I cough, Wednesday, midday for me, still morning for Casey. Early afternoon for all my listeners on the East Coast, and then I'm not even going to try to comprehend time zones anymore of the UK, Abu Dhabi, wherever and anyone is listening to this show. But thank you for joining us here on the A-Side. Shorty Torres is supposed to be here. He is currently stuck in traffic in the Dominican Republic. I'm sure I'll tell you all about it when he arrives, but he is supposed to be here. When he joins us, he will be thrown right in seamlessly. He's a pro, pro fighter and pro podcaster, so we'll get him in once he's available. But joining me this week, until he shows up, Mr. E. Casey Lyon. Casey, how's Englewood?
It's going okay. I think that's how the phrase go. It's all okay in Englewood.
Englewood is fine.
Fine, yeah. Englewood's fine, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, it's starting to get winter here in Arizona. We had a blistering cold high of 82 yesterday. So I had to break out the winter parkas
82,
for everyone. I wish that was a joke, but it's not. People in Arizona find any reason to start wearing winter clothes.
Yeah, it's 60 degrees right now, so I have the fire on right now to stay warm. I'm wearing my Jack Johnson Roots of Fight hoodie. So
I had one of the original line runs from Roots of Fight, and the first one I got was Jack Johnson, and it was back. And remember when the old Roots of Fights, they were made well, but they weren't made as well as they are now because mm-hmm. they weren't as professional yet. This was probably like 2013, 2014. So I have a shirt that says Ack Sun, like all the letters are gone.
Oh, yeah,
except for like, it says Ack Sun, and then it has Galveston Giant, everything else, but all my letters peeled off. But I pretty much have that same sweater. But anyway, enough about sweaters, unless you want to talk about sweaters. Yeah. This is, of course, the A-Side Live Chat. You can ask us any question you want on Twitter, the site, the YouTube comments. You can text me, because people have done that before. If you have my number, you want us to talk about whatever. But without further ado, Casey, what is our first question?
First question. Where are we? All right, here we go.
From Tanguen 2013 on Twitter. How can the UFC get more people excited about the men's flyweight when they couldn't do it with Demetrius Johnson? So, yes, I guess this is alluding to this weekend's pay-per-view, UFC 255 between Davison Figueiredo, UFC flyweight champ, who puts his title on the line for the first time against Alex Perez, former Contender Series alum and winner. Obviously, Davison Figueiredo was supposed to fight Cody Garbrandt, so I think that was the big selling point. Cody's obviously one of the more remarkable fighters and one of the fighters that the UFC really likes to push. Davison Figueiredo is not one of those. If he had beaten Cody Garbrandt, he would probably have gotten the shine, but that's not the case. So, Casey, how can the UFC get more people excited about the men's 125-pound division when they couldn't do it with arguably one of the greatest fighters of all time when he ranked atop that weight class?
I have so many opinions on this, but I don't know. I feel like haven't we been asked the same question for the last 10 years?
Yes.
I feel like we're going in a loop. I don't know, man. I still think it's up to Dana White. Like, he needs, like, He needs to sit when he's watching fights instead of having Hams at next to him. Have freaking Figueiredo next to him. Have Joe Benavidez on his shoulders. I don't know. Just like treat these guys like they're badass dudes rather than going like, hey, this little guy occasionally can knock someone out, you know, or something like that. I don't sure. know, man. Like, you gotta treat these guys like they're top of the line fighters and not like. Like Brandon Royval and Brandon Royval versus Moreno, that should be, I think, on the main card. You don't treat that fight not as a free fight. You get to watch on ESPN, but like these guys are so good, you have to pay money to watch this fight, and like not just a championship fight, number one contender fight. And I think that's why you put it higher on the card because it gives it more value, because even though less people will watch it. It's a better experience because like you are paying money to watch this. These guys are so good. You are paying to watch it. You know, maybe something like that. I don't know. It's like,
I think the 125 pound division, specifically the men's, has had a lot of bad luck. I think it's a little combination of a few things. Demetrius Johnson is one of, if not the greatest fighters who ever lived. I'd probably put him top five in MMA history, not UFC history. He's obviously the greatest flyweight who ever lived. It's not a problem. It's that he wasn't this big, loud character that the UFC likes to push, like the Conor McGregors, or even like Habib has a thing to him. Tony Ferguson has a thing to him. Like, that's why people aren't getting like lining up to watch Stipe fight, because he's not this big, loud, boisterous person. And that's not a knock on Demetrius Johnson whatsoever, because I don't think that should be the be all end all of selling a fight. On the other side, he was supposed to be part of a lot of big cards. And for reasons that were out of his control, those plans were changed a lot. Like, he was supposed to be on UFC 177. He was the co-main event of Dillashaw Barao 2 after Dillashaw shocked the world. Barao passed out, so then they had – or no, not that. So then there was a whole lot of shuffling there. So it ended up being Dillashaw versus Joe Soto. But before that, UFC 178 was supposed to be DC versus John Jones 1 before DC pulled out. So then Demetrius Johnson got plucked from 177 to just headline a card he wasn't supposed to. You know who else was on that card? McGregor, Poirier 1, Romero, Kennedy, Nunes, and Ngannou, the return of Cruz, Eddie Alvarez debut. So pretty much everyone, and he fought Chris Carriasso. So the main event of that stacked card had Demetrius Johnson and Chris Carriasso at the top. And then he headlined a couple Fox cards, which is awesome. And he said he preferred those because he got all the money from Xbox for being on free TV rather than a pay-per-view. He was, again, supposed to be the co-main event of the Montreal card, which is, again, supposed to be Barao Dillashaw 2, before I think it was Dillashaw pulled out this time. So it ended up being Demetrius Johnson versus Horiguchi, which is an awesome fight, but, again, not the original main event. He did get to co-main event against – it was supposed to be, what, John Jones, DC 2 again, if I'm not mistaken, before DC pulled out. And it ended up being John Jones, Ovin St. Preux, rather than Jones, DC. So – Demetrius Johnson is getting these big marquee spots to get the rub from the people above him, and then stuff falls apart. I think even he even headlined a co-main event. Was it did he co-headline the Nunes Shevchenko 2 card in Edmonton, if I'm not mistaken? I might be mistaken.
He was supposed to.
No, that was
– He was supposed that, to main was event. He was supposed to main or co-main against – what's his name?
Ray Borg,
and then Ray Borg had problems. Yeah.
They moved it to Vegas, and they stuck that in the co-main event for an interim lightweight fight between Tony Ferguson and Kevin Lee.
You know, I just realized. Actually, this is the problem. I just when you mentioned all those fights and everything beforehand. This is Dana's problem. This is the UFC's problem. To make that flyweight division what people want it to be. They need to create a rivalry people care about. And they had it. They had the rivalry with Cejudo and Demetrius. They had it. And then they lost it. For the first time, you can have done Cejudo versus Demetrius Johnson 3 as a main event pay-per-view. And there would have been real hype, real trash talk, at least from Cejudo. Maybe, I don't know how Demetrius would have gone about it. But
I think it would have been hard because Demetrius Johnson doesn't clap back at people.
It doesn't matter. You need a real rivalry. And that would have been a true, because it would have been 1-1. You had Demetrius had a knee injury. I still thought Demetrius won the second fight, even with the knee injury. I do acknowledge it's a super close fight, and Cejudo could have taken it. I mean, if you think Cejudo won the second fight.
Not a rock.
It was a super close fight. I still had Demetrius winning it, even with the messed up knee. And you had an opportunity to have a true pay-per-view main event flyweight fight, real, you know, everything on the line. And the UFC, they got Ben Askren instead.
And without Ben Askren, we don't get Jorge Masvidal.
And
you know that big argument everyone keeps saying? It's funny. Yeah. Even Dana White was like, people complains that people are like, oh, one championship won the trade, and then one of the commenters was like, yeah, but they never would have gotten the 5-second knockout if they didn't make the trade. And Dana was like, thank you.
Yeah, but
I'm like, Dana White, you did not trade for Ben Askren thinking he'd get knocked out.
But yeah, if you want to play that game, and you can go and you could. That's a silly game to play. Yeah, you can go back to Strike Force. Well, if they didn't get, because they got Ben Askren, they got Masvidal from the Strike Force deal. You know, so we can go on and on.
We never would have gotten Daniel Cormier if Alistair Overeem didn't pull out of the Grand Prix.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Alistair Overeem. But I think that's what's missing. Honestly, I think there's no rivalry. Maybe maybe if Figueiredo Perez is going to be a great fight, maybe that creates a rivalry. I just don't think Alex Perez is that guy to create that rivalry. At least as far as trash talk wise. But there's no big rivalries at 25. Am I missing? Am I forgetting one?
There could have been.
It could have been rid of Horiguchi. You know, like Horiguchi's right there. You know, but yeah. So
the problem is. Demetrius, like, people would trash talk Demetrius Johnson. Demetrius Johnson wouldn't respond, and then he'd make you look foolish. So he'd be like, told you. Like, remember when Ray Borg talked a little bit of trash about his grappling, same with Chris Carriasso, and then Demetrius Johnson won. He's like, got him. And then he just, like, walked out. Like, that was it, which is cool. I like that style of trash talking, but
I love
the fights weren't competitive.
You know, but when Anderson was rolling to the 85 division, people were complaining about Anderson. They were complaining about the middleweight division. Middleweight division sucks because it's a weird thing.
They needed Chael.
Yeah, Anderson needed that Chael. He needed Vitor. He needed that rivalry.
It was set up perfectly. Anderson Silva's front kick KO was Demetrius Johnson's suplex armbar.
Yeah.
Like, greatest knockout, greatest submission in UFC history. Like, if they're up, I know there's a big argument, but in my mind, like, those are probably top five. And then the rivalry with Cejudo was there, and then they didn't pull the trigger. They couldn't pull the trigger because trades happened and everything, and they booked Cejudo against Marlon next. But was it Marlon? No, it was TJ. It was TJ in January on the first ESPN Plus card. So yeah, I agree with you. The ingredients were there; it just didn't happen.
All right. Well, that's a bummer. All right, let's go to the YouTube comments.
From Tristan Gordet, another longtime commenter. What about, is that what WB means?
Yeah, sure.
What does WB mean? Royval versus Brandon Moreno happening this Saturday for UFC 255 on the prelims. Do you think the winner gets a title shot? Or will the UFC still book Cody as being the next challenger? It'll be Cody. It'll 100% be Cody. I think Dana White's already said it. Cody's already said it, that whenever Cody returns, he'll probably get the flyweight title fight. If it is Davidson Figueiredo, either. If Perez and Figueiredo are such action fighters for the flyweight division, I actually do like Cody. It's not fair, but in terms of an actual fight, I do like that for Cody versus either of those two guys. But in terms of what's fair, the winner of Brandon on Brandon should fight for the title next. Then you also have Manel Cape versus Pantoja. You got Askarov out there. So there's a lot of things that need to happen. What I don't want to happen is Brandon on Brandon happens, and then they have to fight again. They should get the title shot or the winner of Cody versus whoever. We don't know when Cody's coming back. So if he's out for a long time, probably Brandon. Oh, I see. Brandon Royval versus Brandon Moreno. There was just no space between W and B in the question. Brandon on Brandon should be number one contender. It just probably isn't.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
I think it depends on how awesome that fight is. If Roval and Moreno is a fight of the night, which I think it will be, who knows? Maybe it could. Maybe Dana might feel lucky. We don't know how injured Cody really is. So if the winner of the title fight wants a quick turnaround and everyone's ready to go in 3 months, maybe that might be the fight to run back. I think a lot of it has to do with timing. But,
I agree. Also, people keep saying the Brandon on Brandon fight is probably going to be the main event, the fight of the night. Figueiredo Perez could easily be fight of the night too. Remember Figueiredo versus Pantoja in Edmonton, the fight you and I were at? Mm-hmm. That fight ruled, and that was buried on the prelims.
Yeah,
so, that was a rare prelim that won fight of the night.
But look, we're arguing right now which men's flyweight fight will be the fight of the night, and yet we're also still talking about, why don't people watch men's flyweights? You know, so it's a weird, I don't get it. Yeah. World is dumb.
From Roko Sladic on the YouTube comments, do you think that Kevin Holland has a real chance of beating Hermanson in December? He has a chance. I would heavily favor Jack Hermanson, but Kevin Holland's been on a roll. Jack Hermanson, I don't think there's any question, has beat way better competition than Kevin Holland, like the win over Jacare, the win over Kelvin. His most recent loss was to Cannonier when he got knocked dead. So, yeah, I heavily favor Jack Hermanson, who's been in a full camp preparing for Darren Till. Now it's Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland has had a lot of fights, and a lot of fights fall out, and a lot of opponent changes, but I heavily favor Jack Hermanson. Casey?
Yeah. Got a favor Jack Hermanson, but Holland's the type of guy you just don't know. That's what makes him an exciting fighter, because you kind of see all this maybe untapped potential in his fights. You know, you just kind of like, man, like, this guy could be really good. And how old is he? He's 28, so you know he's hitting his prime. So maybe those previous losses we saw from Holland was just him working his way up to his eventual prime. Yeah, and maybe that shows up.
I think a big issue that he's going to run into, I was at his fight in Jacksonville, Kevin Holland. I cannot remember who he fought for the love of me, but he called out Mickey Gall for 170 pounds because his reasoning was, A, he wouldn't mind going back to 170, and Kevin Holland's like, I'm not the best grappler, and my submission skills and defense are not the best, so I want to throw myself into these fights that I'm uncomfortable with. You can't be a bad grappler and have bad submission defense and fight Jack Hermanson. The dude will choke, grab your leg, grab your neck, grab your arm, grab anything. So, again, with all that in mind, I heavily favor Jack Hermanson. Kevin Holland is a bad dude, and if he wins, I think he'd be right near the top of my Fighter of the Year list. And but I think, we talked
I,
about that.
Yeah. And I think well. Honestly, I think Kevin Holland's a he is 6'3". I mean, okay, never mind. I thought he was – I never actually stood next to Kevin Holland, so – I thought he was more of a welterweight, just not cutting weight. I know he can cut the welterweight.
He's like Mickey Gall, where he looks like he should be a weight class below him, but he's so tall for the division.
Yeah.
That I think it just, like, he's like, how tall is he? 6'2", 6'3"?
6'3". Yeah, 6'3". I was like, okay, 6'3". That is kind of hard to
make. John Jones is 6'4". Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I think Kevin Holland at 185 is the place to be.
Yeah, But how big is Hermanson? Hermanson's got to be like, Hermanson's only 6'1", but obviously wider. So I'm interested
way
in that fight.
Like, wait,
yeah,
he's your friend. They do share a common opponent, and they've both lost to Thiago Santos at 185.
Yeah, dude. And Holland's fight versus Santos was awesome. He came in like on last a week's minute. Notice. Yeah, and it was a really exciting fight. Yeah, that was the fight they got him in the UFC. I forgot.
Yeah, because he taught all that greasiness on the Contender Series. And he annoyed Dana White so much that when they needed an opponent, they were like, throw him in there.
And now he's like, I never understood that. Dana White's like, we want trash talkers. Oh, that guy talks trash. Don't sign him. Whatever.
I think Dana's argument was it wasn't the best fight and he was still talking trash. And the dude's like, calm down.
Was he in the first season of the Contender Series?
He was a very early Contender Series.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was back in the top gym.
Back when they were actually picky about who got the contract. If Kevin Holland was on this season's Contender Series, he would have got signed by the second round. They wouldn't have to go into the fight.
The early Contender Series fights in the Tough Gym was not as polished as it is now. Because, like, did you watch those early Contender Series fights?
The first season was the only one I watched. After that, I quit watching it.
Some of the fighters backstage you know how they all line them up and then they announce them like live on ESPN and they have like the it's fine, it's whatever.
Make a game show.
They didn't do that back. So like sometimes the media would be like, you didn't get the contract. Like the media would have to break to the fighters. That's how unpolished it was in the early seasons.
Well, the UFC figured out that, oh, just make this a game show rather than fights. Oh, wait. We got someone. Someone's calling in.
Shorty. Hey, there he is.
All right, my internet's really bad here, so can you guys hear me or everything all good?
You're crystal, man.
Everything's good right now.
Aces.
Look at that.
Shorty, we teased it. How's the traffic in the Dominican Republic?
Dude, it is horrendous. Like, there's only two lanes. Everyone drives like a maniac, and somehow there's no accidents, but like there are lights, but no one at all obeys them. No. It looks like it just they all treat them like yield signs. Like people just go, and if you get hit, like you get hit. That's it. And they just
sounds like Mexico. Sounds like Mexico City. I feel like I'm
100%.
Yeah, I feel like I'm gonna get hit by a car whenever I step out of my hotel there or family house. Anyway, well, thank you for joining us. Do you want to tell us why you're in the Dominican Republic?
I'm literally all sweaty. I'm actually commentating. I'm not the play-by-play guy. I'm actually the color commentator. I've been upgraded, so I'm on the spot here. But I'll be commentating for Fighting Force this weekend on Saturday as Lex McMahon heads the show, making his debut, and I'm really, really excited for that because he is my manager, and I got to punch him in the face for this camp. So I'm hoping, obviously, everything goes well. And then on Sunday is Titan FC 65. So I'll be commentating back-to-back for both shows, and I think I actually have two different guys. I have Rico Rodriguez as my commentator, a co-host on Saturday, which was a UFC former champion. And then I have Ulysses Diaz, the guy who got the 3-second KO in BKFC, commentating with me on Sunday. So I'm excited.
And by the way, 3 seconds, it was more like 2 seconds. I saw it.
Yeah, it was really like, dude, and that's the crazy part. Like it's so awesome to be like, dude, I got a 2-second KO, but like, how does it feel about the other guy? Like, oh, I got knocked out. It happens, but 2 seconds though.
As a fighter, do you feel bad for when other fighters lose like within like 10 seconds, 20 seconds? I always feel because like to lose a fight before you even break a sweat. I don't know. I just think that's just so. I don't know. It's hard to watch.
The hardest part about the sport. I'm pretty sure like we've seen KOs that have probably ended a little too quick or like. You know, ended up happening a lot faster than expected. It's one of those things that you can train your ass off to be the best in the world. You can have literally the best training camp in the world, but somehow you blink for 1 second, the guy just punches you, and that's it. It's over. You know, or like Anderson Silva could be losing all 4 rounds, even all 5 rounds, and then last minute gets a triangle and wins a fight. The same thing with these KOs. So, hell, I even feel bad reposting videos that I KO'd people in. Because I'm like, damn, I'm friends with all these guys. I'm sorry, man. I gotta highlight myself.
Casey, what was the most heartbreaking sub-minute knockout you can remember? I have my answer.
Oh, I was just kind of like secretly rooting for a fighter, and they just got demolished. Like, oh, you're muted. Something happened.
Scene in the setting was a little emotional. Like for me, I always point to Mark Hominick when he walked out in Toronto. Was it after his coach passed away?
Yeah.
And he walked out to I'm Coming Home, and it was like just so sad. And everyone was like, let's go, Mark. this big, big emotional moment, and then he loses in 7 seconds with the Korean Zombie.
Yeah, just pop, pop. Yeah,
that was so brutal.
Oh, yeah, is that the one where like he kind of like touched hands and was like just trying to punch immediately?
Yeah, he touched. Yeah, he like came touched. In, yeah.
Yeah, he tried. He like touched, and then he tried to throw like this lead hook, missed, and the Korean Zombie just came in with a straight, yeah, just, and just like just erupted on his face, and then finished it off. It was a good stoppage. At the time, people complained about it, but I do not think it was a bad stoppage at all.
No.
Whatever happened to Mark Hominick?
He retired after he lost to Pablo Garza. I know that, but I don't know what he's up to these days. Might be coaching. Yeah. Still. Might be run. Coaching.
Yeah,
he had a good run. He was an OG. He was an OG for sure. I think he had like 30 plus fights in a lower weight class back in the early 2000s. So it was like he was an OG anyway.
All
right. Do you know?
I'm so sweaty. I got like swamp ass right now because I just finished outside with Juan Borta, who's fighting this weekend, and I forgot that I'm not in fighting shape. So he's like, "Yeah, we'll just run a nice slow pace," and he just takes off. I'm like, "Ah, oh, damn! All right, just go," you know. So it's yeah. I'm all sweaty. Let's do this.
Well, hey, well, the camera's only, you know, chest high, so if you want to air anything out, yeah.
The A side turns into an
hey.
Anyway, Shorty, you know the drill. We've been getting questions. We've talked flyweights a little bit so far. You weren't here for the question, ask you, how can UFC get more people excited about the men's flyweight division when they couldn't do it with Demetrius Johnson?
The good thing is that Davidson Figueiredo and even Alex Perez, even if he wins this fight, they're both, in a sense, knockout artists. Davidson Figueiredo, man, he's been knocking out everyone. He's not the wrestler, but you look at his last two performances, Joseph Benavidez. Luckily for Figueiredo, they really, really, really banked and highlighted Joseph Benavidez for both fights. You know, so automatically, even though he was technically belittled, it's kind of like Amanda Nunes versus Ronda Rousey. Even though she was belittled, she was the victor towards the end of it. Now everyone's like, damn, this is awesome. Like, who is this guy? Because we knew nothing about him, and he destroyed the person that they were highlighting. But then you look at Alex Perez. If Alex Perez wins, he's the very first champion in the Contender Series. The UFC is going to boast incredibly about him and then try to pick up more talent in the Contender Series. So, you know, it's a win-win for this fight, and that's why it is a main event, even over the women. Valentina Shevchenko, the best, you know, woman flyweight in history. But, you know, when it comes to getting them excited for every other fight, like Brandon Moreno or Formiga, which sadly he got released, which is really, really crazy, or any of these other guys, that's the hard part. I don't see them – I see them putting them on maybe like the very first fight in the main card or maybe the second to last fight in the prelims, but that's the hard part, and that's something I can't even really figure out. Like, oh, how are we going to figure – you know, I really boast about Brandon Moreno is probably the next guy coming up that's super wild, super entertaining. What is the other guy from Colorado? I believe he's from
Fantasy. Brandon Royval. Brandon Royval. Yeah.
He's just like Brandon Royval's style, where he just has fun. He does his thing. So those are two guys they can really, really highlight and boast about because they're fun and exciting. They both know jiu-jitsu. They both know the stand-up game. And they're both just trying to put on a show and having fun in between the rounds as well. So, and even their interviews are pretty fun. So that's a good thing. Brandon Moreno's learning how to really promote himself when it comes to the Latin American culture as well, and you know all the Spanish speakers out there. But when it comes to highlighting the rest of the division, that's the hard part. It's great that now the fans are like, oh, flyweights, we care about them, we're gonna watch them, to where now they could be a main event for a two title fight show, which is great. The problem is, how are they gonna highlight the rest of the division? I don't know.
I think moving forward, just the fact that like after this fight, the fact that there is conversation over who's next, yeah, I think it's a good thing because we're kind of entering that territory where there's like both Brandons. We got Brandon on Brandon, Royval and Moreno. We got Manel Cape and Pantoja, which that fight absolutely rules coming up. And then you got Askarov out there who fought Brandon Moreno to a draw. I wish they had run that back instead of Brandon on Brandon, but I get it. And then you got Cody floating around out there. So I think moving forward, we're going to have a lot of fun flyweight scraps on the horizon. And of course, Kai Kara-France, who is his teammate in City Kickboxing. He lost to Brandon Royval. He's not out of the picture whatsoever because you know the UFC really wants to push City Kickboxing. So I think it's I think the UFC flyweight division is in a better place than they've been in a long time.
They're easily in the best place. I was literally talking about it earlier with Juan Porta. I was like, man, it's crazy how when I got signed, they weren't trying to sign people because they were kind of like whatever in division. And then when I made the post about Demetrius Johnson, Datsun and I got released. Datsun and Jared Brooks got released. Datsun and Justin Scoggins. Everyone started being, you know, diminished, and it was like Thanos snapping his finger. Everyone slowly started disappearing, and now there's literally less than half the division left. And then the only person that I believe that got re-signed was Brandon Moreno, which, hey, man, like, I'm happy for him. But then you looked at all the other guys that have been signed that usually been last minute or signed for less money than the original possible 10-on-10 or 12-on-12 contracts that the male flyweights were receiving. So it's a little bit different, but it's nothing but win for the UFC because now they have to pay less fighters. They have to pay less for these new fighters. And all these new fighters are like, yeah, I'm in the UFC. Let's try to work our butt off to put on an amazing show. And so far, everyone's doing it. So now the fans are behind the flyweight division, which is amazing. A little too late, too soon, you know, type of thing. But, you know, rather late than never. So right now they are 100% in a way better place than what was expected, where now there's no flyweights. Again, we have, what, 15, 16 guys now?
Yeah, we have enough for a full ranking.
Yay! Maybe a 20 fight roster. Yay! Finally, there you go. We're going back out.
I think they was Louis Smolka one of the ones they re-signed? He got released, right?
Yeah, he got released. He came back to 35, though. He isn't.
He came back with the bantamweight.
Yeah,
which again, that made me hate a little bit on him because, and again, it's nothing against Louis Smolka, but Louis Smolka lost 4 in a row, and then gets cut, and then almost like 2 months later gets re-signed at 135. A lot of us flyweights were like, dude, it's okay. I'll fight 135. And they're like, nope, sorry, you're cut. And then there was a handful of flyweights that were like, you know what? We do like you. We'll allow you to bump up. And then maybe if the flyweight division slowly starts to get better in popularity, we'll let you move back down. So there was only a select few that they let happen. May obviously, they're like, get out of here. Who cares if you had another a belt at 135? No one cares about it. So it's given I'm hating a little bit. But again, it's the connections and the people you know, and then it becomes a little political. So it is what it is.
It is what it is. Flyweights rule, though.
I think
flyweights rule.
Yeah, I think it's the answer to every question. It is what it is.
2020. It is what it is.
All right.
What is our next question, Casey? From Daniel Pompilio on Twitter. Pitbull keeps murdering people over at Bellator. Yes, he does. Is he the best 145er on the planet? I can see him taking out Volkanovski. So, yes, Shorty, I'm sure you saw. I watched it. Casey watched it. Patricio Pitbull, who, in my opinion, is the greatest Bellator fighter of all time. I know Douglas Lima is there. I'd put him right there. Obviously, Michael Chandler's in the UFC now, but you got to put him on the list. But in my opinion, Patricio Pitbull is the greatest Bellator fighter who has ever lived. But do you think he's the best 145-pound fighter on planet Earth, regardless of promotion? Shorty, I'll start with you.
I do because he has gone against some of the best competition right now. Volkanovski, the champion, hasn't defended the belt. So, you know, besides Max Holloway, you know, there's not really much to say after that. You know, he needs to be tested against other guys. You know, Pitbull has been tested. He's been through the ringer. I would love to see him do cross promotion stuff, maybe a Rising again, maybe the UFC one day. I highly, highly doubt it. You know, swallows the pride and does a cross promotion thing. But, you know, the UFC is number one for a reason right now, so they don't need to try to possibly, in a sense for them, belittle themselves to go to a possible smaller promotion to get any type of publicity or say that their champions are better for whatever reason. Because I think if they did a cross-promotion with Bellator and Bellator fighters won, it would look really, really bad in the UFC and start to put up some fame for Bellator. So I would love to see some cross-promotion stuff. I don't see it happening, but I believe Pitbull is easily right now the best featherweight in any promotion.
I was talking, we talked about it on Between the Links, and we were like going down the 145 pound rankings in the UFC. I wouldn't favor him. I think it would be pretty 50-50 against Volkanovski, Holloway, Ortega. But after those three, I would probably favor Pitbull over the rest of the UFC rankings. I know you got like Zombie, it would be pretty close, but they both train at the same gym at Fight Ready, so I'm kind of not putting them in that category. But yeah. And also, in my, like, let's not forget, he's a champ. He's also the lightweight champ at Bellator. I think he's a natural bantamweight, honestly. If you see him standing next to featherweights, and he has a win over Juan Archuleta already at featherweight. Mm-hmm. Juan Archuleta is now the bantamweight champion. I think Pitbull could be a triple champ at Bellator because he is by no means a big featherweight at all. But Casey, your opinion on where Patricio falls in the 145-pound world?
If you want to call him the best 45er in the world right now, I have no issue with it. No issue. That's basically it. He's just awesome. I think he's in his freaking prime right now. Mm-hmm. He is a dangerous man. I remember just a couple years ago for an open workout, he was waiting around, and so he was just kind of bored. So he's just we're in a gym, so he just started just throwing some leg kicks on a bag. And I was just like, oh my God, he is just warming up. That is a dangerous man. You okay? You okay, Shorty? What'd you drop there? Banana?
I dropped my banana.
It hit the ground?
It hit the ground.
Oh,
but 5 seconds. Whatever.
Five seconds.
Okay.
All right.
Whatever. I think.
But I just think he's a great fighter. And I would. I don't know. I can't say. No one can say. All right, he would definitely beat Volkanovski. He would definitely beat Brian Ortega. I don't know. But without a doubt, he is extremely competitive against every other featherweight in the world.
Yeah, 100%. He's not going to be blown out of the water by any means. Yeah. 155, it's going to be rough because he's already a small featherweight. I think he just clips Chandler at the exact right moment when they fought. They run that back. It might be 50-50.
Yeah.
It'd be similar to Cejudo Dillard because the fight between Chandler – and Pitbull was the same fight as Cejudo and Dillashaw. Pretty it lasted like 90 seconds, and it was one punch clipped him, and he swarmed him. So I think they fight 5-10 times. I think it's 50-50. Pitbull won that night fair and square. Yeah. It got overshadowed by the Douglas Lima knocking out MVP KO. And that same night, Anderson Silva broke his leg. Volkanovski beat Aldo, and Rose got dropped on her skull. So that Patricio Pitbull performance got a little overshadowed.
And I did not like the stoppage, the Chandler stoppage. I thought the stoppage was a little premature, but,
agree.
It is what it is. There, I agree. Said it again. All right.
I will say, if Patricio Pitbull and AJ McKee meet in the finals of the Grand Prix and Patricio Pitbull just tears through him, I would have a hard time saying he's not the best featherweight in the world because that's the fight – That's the fight I want the most in Bellator.
We didn't get a question, but that I want to talk about that. Let's talk about tonight's tomorrow night's fight.
Tomorrow night's
Caldwell.
AJ McKee
versus Caldwell.
Darren Caldwell obviously went up to featherweight after losing to Kyoko Horiguchi at bantamweight, and now he's fighting AJ McKee. Who, Shorty, I don't know if you're aware, but AJ McKee was one of those fighters that Bellator signed when he was 0-0, kind of like Aaron Pico. What's AJ McKee's record right now? Like 15-0, 16-0?
Something like that.
So he's on like a 16-17 fight win streak, and they've all been in Bellator. So he has the record for like the longest win streak in Bellator history. Maybe the most wins ever. It'd be between him and Pitbull. Talks a lot of greasiness at Patricio Pitbull. They almost got in a fight at a media day we were at. They're on opposite ends of the Grand Prix. The only way they'll fight is in the finals, $4 million. I think that is the biggest fight Bellator can put on right now, and I'm kind of glad they're on opposite ends of the Grand Prix, but I still wish I'd still – it's risky because Darren Caldwell is an unbelievable fighter.
And he's great. It's crazy because Darren Caldwell, when he was Bantamweight champ, there was actually a good possibility that I was going to fight him. There was a chance of signing either with the UFC or Bellator, and I was like in the middle. I was like, I'll sign with Bellator. Why not? And then they denied me. Anyways – Darren Caldwell, just with him, man, he is extremely scary because, one, he's super freaking long. It's ridiculous how long he is. No matter what weight class he is, he's probably going to be the longest guy. And, two, once he gets on top, he might not be doing extreme damage after round one, like, for example, the Kyoji Horiguchi fight. But once he's on top of you, there's almost no getting back up. So it's one of those things that if you do get back up, that is extremely exhausting for AJ McKee. I don't know much about him, and I don't know who he's fought, the who's who, but against Darren Caldwell, a former champion, going for another bout at different weight class, like, you're fighting the best of the best, and now Darren Caldwell being at the weight class that I believe he should be at, and he should have been at his entire career, because 35, man, he just didn't have the gassing. Again, you watch those fights against Kyoji Horiguchi, he was just exhausted after the first round. That was me in wrestling back in college, because I was doing the weight cuts wrong. So it's one of those things that being at featherweight, that's a scary, scary fight. No matter who Darren Caldwell is going to fight, that opponent, it has to be ready to be on the ground and work his butt off and be able to attack on bottom, just like Kyoji Horiguchi did.
Yeah, this fight, to me, is what the – because I favor Patricio Pitbull so heavily against Pedro Carvalho, and that's not a knock on Pedro Carvalho. I just think Patricio Pitbull is on another level. Caldwell, AJ McKee is two fighters in their prime who talk a lot of greasiness, are very colorful characters, and they just happen to be exceptional. Two of the best fighters on the Bellator roster. I think it's a lot more close to a 50-50 than any of AJ McKee's other fights before, because you said you weren't aware of who AJ McKee had fought up until now. So He just tapped Derek Campos in the third round in, what was it, December, if I'm not mistaken. Before that, he fought Georgie Garcanyon. It was like the round robin part of the Grand Prix.
Eight seconds.
He knocked him out in 8 seconds. And that was after when they did the stare down, Georgie was like, yeah, I used to beat up your dad in training camp or something like that. And AJ McKee was just like, all right, guy. And then he knocked him out in 8 seconds. Before that, Pat Curran, Justin Lawrence. So it's like he's taken every fight he's had has been another step up, step up, step up. So he's not going – he's not fighting cans like a lot of people complain about in Bellator. He's getting – every fight he takes is another step up in competition, and he continues to win and win impressively. So this fight rules. This fight rules. If it was last week, it would still – like last week we talked about who has the better card between UFC and Bellator. Even if this card was last week, it would still be better. I would still be more excited for McKee Caldwell than Felder Dos Anjos.
I think McKee's one of those guys that I don't think he's lost a round in his career either. Maybe very not early, sure. but like at least in his last like 10 fights, everything's been it's been domination from standing to every aspect of this, every aspect too.
He fought on the same card as his dad, Antonio. So AJ and Antonio McKee fought on the same card, and they cornered each other, even though they both fought. Yeah. So like Antonio fought on the prelims, and his son was in his corner. And then they just swapped places, and then they fought in, like, the co-main event or something like that. Yep. It was good times. Good times.
So, anyway. Yeah. Just want to talk about that fight a little bit because it's awesome.
Yeah,
that fight is so fun. Now, let's talk about the real featherweight GOAT.
So who's got the stones to step up to the plate? Korean Zombie, I know you won't ignore a meaningful challenge. That's Ryan Hall. Yeah. Ryan Hall tweeted this. It was cut off at the top. Obviously, Jose Aldo is at bantamweight now. Frankie Edgar is at bantamweight. Is that Josh Emmett? He seems to be hurt.
Yeah, well,
I don't know why. Why is Dan Ige crossed out?
Well, let's just talk about this. It's like, so apparently Ryan Hall is he's ready to start talking. That sorry, you can't can you see Jose? Are you there? That's funny. So I'm gonna have to cover you up, Jose. Shorty. Yeah,
that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, but look at Ryan Hall. Like He's gonna start playing the game. It looks like I'm gonna talk my greasiness, you know. And I guess apparently these four fighters at the top have turned them down behind the scenes, and that's who's left.
Two of them are at bantamweight now. Josh Emmett has no knee, and I would assume Dan Ige is the actual one that turned him down because the other three aren't gonna be able to fight him anytime soon.
I just feel like the guy from Home Improvement, who's the neighbor. Who just gives advice on the backside of the fence where you can't see the rest of his face.
Funny. I like that right there. There you go. So who's next for Ryan Hall?
The zombie fight's awesome. The Jeremy Stevens fight's awesome. Holloway and Cater are out. They just got booked up. I think Zabit's going to fight Yair. So I'm crossing them off. Ortega's going to fight Volkanovski. So I'm crossing him off. So it's going to be between Stevens, Shane Burgos, and Sadiq Youssef, and Korean Zombie, of course. I think Stevens already accepted Giga Chikadze, so maybe cross him off. So Zombie, Shane Burgos, and Sadiq Youssef, those are the three that he would have the options of. Shorty, which one would you like to see Ryan Hall fight first?
I would like to see him fight all the above. Now, for Ryan, it sucks because Ryan Hall, no one wants to fight him. His jiu-jitsu is that good. Who comes in starting with the M&R roll? Thank you for moving it. Cover the Tyler Jose. I mean, it would be fun to see him fight a high-level jiu-jitsu guy who as well knows MMA extremely well, and I think that would be Brian Ortega. You know, Brian Ortega is one of those guys that relies on his jiu-jitsu. But this last fight against Korean Zombie, he just started to become a boxer. And you're like, wow, this is awesome. But then he shows the dangers of the guillotine. He shows the dangers of what he can do on the ground once he does get it there. I think him versus Ryan Hall would be one of those fights that maybe, just maybe, Ryan would have to be forced to be put into vulnerable situations and figure out something a little different. I think Ryan Hall's jiu-jitsu, because that's his, you know, that's his bread and butter, would be better. But it would be nice to see a battle of you know, in a sense, combat jiu-jitsu in the UFC.
Do you remember Ryan Hall versus Darren Elkins when Ryan Hall became K-1 level Ryan Hall? Remember that fight? He dropped Darren Elkins two times with kicks, head kicks.
But I mean, like, Darren Elkins is kind of like me. Like, when he sees a kick coming, he kind of goes to it instead of away from it. So, like, we have no head movement. Like, There's a reason. Like, you can't be like, oh, dude, the guy with the word damage on his chest got dropped. It's unbelievable. It's like, no, yeah, it makes nothing but sense. So, you know, I think against Darren Elkins, anyone's going to look good. But it doesn't mean you're going to beat him, if that makes any sense.
Like, I know.
Exactly. Darren Elkins, every one of his fights, and honestly, he's just like me, every one of his fights, he's going to be the one getting damaged. But it does not mean he's going to lose. You know, so.
He won his last fight.
He's going to look good against him stand-up-wise. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He won his last fight. It looked like he fell down a mountain. Yeah.
Yeah, dude, like, his skin is just as sensitive as mine. And, like, you get flicked, and out of nowhere, it's like, poof. You know, so Darren Elkins is one of those guys that, like, he goes to the hospital to get surgery, and they're like, oh, my God, what happened? I got into a fight, but I won, though. And how's the other guy? And he looks like freaking Sage Northcutt after he got knocked out and, like, 8 fractures in his face, like a freaking Ken doll.
You remember when Ryan Hall fought Gray Maynard and he kept throwing that sidekick, that Wonder Boy sidekick the whole fight, and it visibly just took Gray Maynard completely out of the fight? Because he kept trying to blitz him, and then he'd get like his neck slapped back, and then all of a sudden he'd get stuck in like an Imanari roll, like Shorty said. Weird time. Weird fight. Love that fight. Weird fight.
Dude, I have no issue of saying that Ryan Hall is the most intimidating fighter in the UFC, because every single fighter that faces him has to change their game plan. They can't go, I'm just going to fight how I want to fight. No, you have to fight defensively against Ryan Hall. And that's why I think he is the most intimidating fighter in the UFC. Maybe outside him and Francis. But you know what I'm trying to say, Shorty?
Because, honestly, Ryan Hall is just like my last and next opponent, Sean Santella, where literally they rely solely on jiu-jitsu. But anytime they do anything stand-up related, you're like, what is he going to do? Because you just don't expect it. So you kind of have those jitters. Or, you know, like for me, I'm more judo-based. So my last fight, I'm like trying to throw the guy, and he's pulling guard and doing something. Like, dude, let's just play. Like, stop doing what you want to do. And I had to change my whole game, because now I have to, like, the grappler's always going to have an advantage against a striker. You look at Cejudo versus Pettis, and every single fight, you know, that corresponds with that. Pettis is a phenomenal stand-up fighter and a high-level jiu-jitsu practitioner. But when you have somebody who's really that good on the ground that's going to control you, and you know is going to go or try to take you to the ground, you always have to be like, I don't know what I'm going to do. What is he going to do? I want to throw a punch, but I'm intimidated. I'm scared. And you have Ryan Hall who's going to do an Imanari roll. So it's one of those things that you just don't know what the hell is going to happen. And it's scary as hell.
This week on The Pitch, it's tween time.
We're redefining feminine hygiene for tweens.
You've done 5 million in sales. You did 3 million last year. Very impressive.
Thank you.
I really believe in this category. I'm an investor in a company called Aunt Float.
And similarly, I'm a personal investor in Ruby Love.
Like Elizabeth and Charles, I have seen a lot of these companies. Mm-hmm. I've never made an investment in the space. You should be raising more than $500,000.
As a Black woman, for me to come on here and say, I'm going to become the new Always, that's super audacious. And I could we for sure.
What makes it audacious?
Yeah, let's do it.
So what you wanted. That's what I wanted to hear.
I get the sense back her experience might have been a little different.
Save the mic.
That looked really expensive.
This week on The Pitch, Monica Williams drops the mic. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, point. You're muted again.
I'm glad you brought up Cejudo and Pettis. That's a fight no one talks about enough, because Cejudo just dominated that whole fight.
All right. So,
but it wasn't the most
exciting.
Wasn't
that on the prelims
fight
as well?
No, that. So the problem with that fight is because it was sandwiched between that was on the main card. The fights around it were Eddie Alvarez and Justin Gaethje, and Ngannou Overeem, and Max Holloway Aldo 2. So of those four fights, including Cejudo and Pettis, of those four fights, which had the least action?
Especially Cejudo back in the day. Cejudo, when we first saw it, was solely just a wrestler.
Well, like, I think Alvarez Gaethje was 3 rounds, and that was Justin Gaethje. I think he was coming off the loss to Poirier, maybe. But again, fight of the year candidate.
Yeah.
Overeem and Ngannou. When Ngannou decapitated Overeem, one of the greatest knockouts in UFC history. And then Aldo Holloway was just a spectacular fight between the two greatest featherweights in the world. And then Cejudo and Pettis were just sandwiched between all that. It was an unfortunate situation because, again, like Cejudo dominated that. And if Pettis had won, he would have gotten a title shot because I feel like he kept getting there and losing.
Was Masvidal on that card too? Was Masvidal Maya on that card too?
No, that was Dallas.
Okay, I think I'm different. Sorry.
It was the same thing with Benavidez versus Pettis. They were on the UFC Fight Pass prelims.
Yeah.
And it was like, what? Why? This is literally number two.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, there we go. There we lost him. Fine. Oh. And he's gone. I like that shorty guy. He was a good guy.
You hate to see it. You know who else is on UFC 218, though? Like, Tietje Torres, Michelle Waterson kicked off the main card.
All right. You know, we only got a few. Let's see if he can get back in, but we only have about 10 minutes left before we got to switch over to.
Yes, for those of you wondering, we are going to stream. Hey, he's back.
Am I back?
You're back.
All right, sorry. My internet is so bad, and every time someone calls me, it's like, yeah, let's just mess up everything you do, even if you deny it. But
yeah, that
what
makes
I
sense.
Was saying. Yeah, it's my life. But what I was saying is, it is what it is, I guess. You know, Sergio Pettis and Benavidez, number two and three, were on the UFC fight prelims. And if Pettis would have won, he would have got the title shot. But Benavidez won, he had to fight like three more times after that just to get a title shot. So it's like, damn, at that time, you know, Benavidez was a gatekeeper and wasn't even super, I guess, promoted. But then again, years later, he's, you know, the two-time runner-up again at a main event. You know, so it's kind of weird how they promote us small guys, but it is what it is.
That was a blonde Joby that lost to Sergio Pettis when he came in with the platinum blonde hair. The CM Punk show that card in Chicago.
I kind of thought Joby won that fight. I mean, it was super close, though. It was super close.
Oh, yeah. That was you and I did the preview show for Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
Shorty.
Yeah,
I remember that. That was back in my pre-MMA fighting days.
Good times.
All right. We got to fly through some other questions.
Fly through these questions.
Man.
All right, from Terrence Leverett on Twitter. If Dana states that Habib's next fight will be at 170 against the champ, how do you see him doing it versus Usman, the current champ, or Gilbert with his hands and jiu-jitsu? Which fight would you like to see more? I'm just going to stop you right there. Neither fight's going to happen. All three of them are managed by Ali. I don't think they're going to want to fight Habib, which is Ali's golden child right now. So I'm going to – that none of those fights are ever going to happen. But I would favor him more against Gilbert because he's fought at lightweight than Kamaru Usman.
I would rather see him fight Usman. Just because that's just a wrestler versus wrestler. I want to see who's more dominant. Again, the Sambo style or the Make American Traditional Wrestling style. And then, obviously, you have Khabib's ground and pound. You know, Usman's phenomenal at taking people down and holding them down, but he's not – he doesn't Khabib people. Like, he's literally hashtag Khabib Nurmagomedov when it comes to the ground and pound. So I think it would be a more interesting fight with Gilbert because of his jiu-jitsu, but I think that fight would end so much faster.
And my answer is I don't want to see Habib's retired, and I don't want to see him fight again. He's done.
There you go.
I'm putting a one-minute timer so we fly through these.
Matt Duffy on the site. Joe Rogan, an idea if Joe Rogan is returning to do commentary for the Vegas pay-per-views, and have you really missed him over the course of the Fight Island pay-per-views? Personally, I couldn't care less if he comes back or not. With guys like DC Felder and Bisman doing the color commentary, I find them all the more knowledgeable about the sport. With just as much personality. I do not know if Rogan's returning. I assume he's going to return for the Vegas card, but I did not miss him on the Fight Island card. Not that I heard him because I was there live, so I didn't hear it, but I think DC, Bisping, and Felder are much better in the year of our Lord, 2020.
I think he's a great commentator, and he's fun. He's interesting. But let's give it to the fighters. You know, these fighters are trying to make a living. These fighters are trying to do their thing outside the box, like myself commentating. It is a huge thing, a huge opportunity, and it gives us a different source of revenue. And plus, our knowledge inside the cage is probably that much better than Joe Rogan's.
I don't miss Joe Rogan. I don't miss him. I think during the middle era of UFC's like those middle pay-per-view, UFC 50, UFC 55, you know, I think Rogan was perfect for that time because he really educated the audience about grappling and, like, how much it sucks and how much, you know, maybe the parts that you thought were boring or was actually exciting, he did a great job of that. But I think we're past that. And I think it's time for like guys like DC and Felder and Dominic Cruz.
Joe Malkin on Twitter: what is the main reason the upcoming pay-per-view card for the what is the main reason for the upcoming thin pay-per-view cards for the UFC to end the year with the welter with the women's featherweight title fight cancellation? The top of the card was a bit lackluster for a usually high-profile show. This Saturday's card also lacks star power. Well, the what is the definition of star power? Like, you're not going to get Conor McGregor on every card. Also, the like a lot of the other champions have fought recently or have fights coming up. So I just think we're in a point in time where this happens every year where there's just not a lot of quote star champions that are available. But Shorty, Casey, what do you think?
Well, with the COVID, you know, it's you take whatever you can get. Sadly, again, 2020, it is what it is. But with this weekend's card, you have two title fights. You have both flyweight champions going up there and you have both of them being knockout artists. So when it comes to star power, they might not be as popular as Amanda Nunes or Conor McGregor or any other champion right now per se, but you have one that's literally the best in her division ever, creating history, and you have the other one that's, in a sense, re-highlighting the flyweight division, and it's a main event over the best flyweight fighter in women's division. So overall, I think it's kind of star power enough towards the end of the year. Happy Thanksgiving.
I think
there you go.
To make stars, you have to put them on big pay-per-views, so... Before there were stars, they were just fighters. So this is what you're watching. You're watching future stars this Saturday night.
Yeah.
How much time we got? All right, gotta go. This is a very important one.
Joseph Boza, Yancey Medeiros tweeted a story that he was in the middle of getting lucky when USADA showed up. What was the craziest USADA story you guys heard from an MMA athlete? Shorty, I don't know if you heard this. Yancey Medeiros was apparently having fun times with his wife, girlfriend. I'm not quite sure what his personal situation is, but he was having fun times in bed.
In the living room, right?
In the living room, I guess, with a female, and USADA knocked on the door. So, of fighters you've been around, what's the craziest story you've heard?
Wasn't there someone who said, like, a fake USADA came to his house, took his
yep,
blood?
That was Danny Gay.
Like, that's pretty messed up. I mean, I haven't heard anything from American Top Team. I know I was personally tested like 5 times, 3 of them in 1 week when I fought Alex Perez, which I didn't know if that was a compliment or it looked like I was on whatever the case may be. I was like sniffing my nose walking. I was like, what? Sorry. But I haven't heard anything. I haven't had any crazy stories. But man, those USADA meetings, they suck. They really, really suck.
I've heard 3. Tim Kennedy pulled a gun on a USADA like agent or whatever because he didn't know who he was.
Who doesn't Tim Kennedy pull a gun
right.
on? Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Kennedy, yeah, like he does that for the pizza delivery.
Yeah, that's a handshake. Yeah.
Tim Kennedy pulled a gun on one of them. Conor McGregor was on a yacht in like the middle of nowhere, and a USADA agent like showed up like on a boat. And
who hasn't been on a yacht?
Right. Tyron Woodley said that I think it was a Super Bowl weekend where he was still the champion at the time. He was going to like some event with like Snoop Dogg and a bunch of other famous hip hop artists, and he was like one of the premier athletes that was going to be there. And USADA gave him a heads up, like, "Hey, we're on our way to where you are now. So if you're going anywhere, stay where you are." And then got stuck in traffic, so he had to wait for them, and he missed like a huge payday to be at like this hip hop festival or whatever because he had to wait for USADA. I remember that one too. Those are the 3 I've heard.
How about the John Jones story? He confessed to himself.
he was hiding under the cage?
Yeah, for weed. Although it wasn't USADA. It was pre-USADA. I think it was the commission. But at that point, they were checking for weed, and you could have lost the fight for weed back then, which you can now, but maybe not. I don't know. But he claims it was because he just smoked a blunt that night. So, but I'd like to share a funny USADA story. On a recent an Anderson Silva fight, after the weigh-ins, I went to the restroom, and when I went to the restroom at the same time, Anderson Silva and the commission people came in to do a piss test for him. So they're in the stall right next to me, and this is Anderson Silva, so he's just like being Anderson Silva, and the whole time he's just yelling, "I can't pee-pee, I can't pee-pee." So, and they're just like, sir, you need to go. He was just kind of laugh and make you go, I can't pee pee for the USADA guys.
They get super close. Like, even if you're not intimidated by peeing in public, like, they're literally like, let's say the camera is your wiener in the cup. They're literally like,
let's see, you're good. You know, okay, no, can you do it? Can you do it? Yeah, you should be good.
It's like, hey, man.
You should be good.
Like, yeah.
Like, wait. Man,
I'm a little shy.
Does USADA actually, are they looking at it?
No,
like, coming straight from the source, not like you don't hand them a cup.
Yeah, they don't. You literally don't do like the cup and turn around and try to pee because they're afraid you're gonna have like some Visine bottle or something in there to like pee fake water or fake pee or whatever the case may be. They literally are like, no, show me the penis, let's see it come out. That's a beautiful stream. Wow, you're really dehydrated, huh? Like, they literally are just looking at you the entire time, and you're just like, I just want to let you know, you're ruining my confidence here, and I'm getting really, really shy. Like, it's bad.
What was the Cody McKenzie story? Remember that one?
What?
Cody McKenzie, I think it was a urine test, and they wouldn't, like, provide a badge or something. I know Alex Kaylee would know all the details on our site. Like, they didn't provide a badge immediately, or they were being weird. So he didn't want to do it, and then they wanted to watch him pee. He's like, yo, this is sexual misconduct because you're trying to watch me pee, and I have no idea who you are. So he wanted to sue the agent for, like, sexual misconduct or whatever because he didn't know who he was, and he kept trying to ask him to take his pants off and pee in a cup. But that's Cody McKenzie's story.
Well, that's pretty much what it is, and, I mean, I get it because, like, even at college, we used to cheat all the time for the NCAA hydration test. We used to hide, like, Visine bottles. We either, like, fake hydrated piss, you know, somebody else's like hydrated piss, or we'd grab like pee and put a little water in there. So we just like squeeze it in there, but you would just see the dude's back and the urinal, but we'd be hiding the Visine bottle in our underwear and just kind of like squeeze it in there. And like, okay. Like, no one could see, but USADA's like, no, we're coming in there with you. All right, let's see this. Like, all right, come on. Yeah. And they just, it doesn't matter if you're out there for like 5 minutes or 30 seconds, like they're going to wait until you finish peeing.
Do they maintain eye contact?
No, there is no eye contact.
It'd be weird straight, otherwise. Yeah,
they're straight down.
I am the prize, right? And okay,
like they're literally like looking down, doing this. Are you good? Are you any time now, buddy? You know, like they're just. It's bad. It's so intimidating.
I think we're good.
Like, anytime they stare at me, I was just like, I do that whole Friday after next. I'm like, it was cold that night.
That's funny. Well, Casey, we're out of time, right?
Yeah.
We're going to end it on USADA peeing in a cup talk because we got UFC media day. Shorty's got to get out to Dominican Republic, to do all kinds of Dominican Republic things. Probably has to take a shower after running swamp ass, like you said. But Shorty, anything you want to say? Anything you want to plug? I know you got a whole bunch of foundations you'd like to talk about.
I do want to say the Team Shorty Foundation next week on Tuesday, already all sold out. I was able to donate 100 meals sponsored by Eat Clean Chicago to the Youth Roads Foundation. Literally in 10 minutes, 100 meals were already gone. So November 24th on Tuesday next week, I'll be doing the food drive, and I'm hoping that next year it gets so much bigger that maybe we get up to 1,000 meals. So I'm really happy. Team Shorty Foundation, please follow it on all platforms. And we will. Together we're our Team Shorty. Thank you so much, guys.
Well said, Shorty. Casey, anything you want to say before we sign off?
Everything Shorty said, wear a mask.
Wear a mask. Stick around for UFC Media Day. See you next Wednesday. We're out.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.